it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. We're joined today by Dr. Aaron Keck, and here's what we're doing. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
Here's what we're doing.
The introduction's just out of the way.
We're just getting that introduction out of the way. Here's what we're doing. We've decided that it's the end of the year, and we know it.
Thank goodness.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, I think I saw Jimmy Fallon last night talking about we're recording on Wednesday and I think, or Thursday. See how it's getting away from
me? Yeah, it's that kind of, it's 2017.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Someone said that the year was going, this year is going by really fast. And I said,
Where have you been?
Well, no, I mean, I feel very much the same way in some ways. And I'm like, man, that's good because the way this year has been, you want it to fly
really,
by fast.
Yeah, it would be fine. You know, if I wake up tomorrow and found out that I slept through Christmas, I'm going to be okay.
We are almost a quarter of the way through the Trump administration.
I know, isn't it?
So,
it's a beautiful.
I mean, hey.
Let's just pause for a minute and let that wash over us. The cleansing breath that it would be.
This is what we've reduced ourselves to.
Right. This is what we'll accept. We're almost through some part of it. What was I going to say?
Are we that far off track already?
So we are. So what we're going to do for this show and the next couple of shows, probably, I hope for the balance of December, is, you know, we usually do a you know, end of year wrap up of the year in news.
Mm-hmm.
This year, we could have started this probably in mid-September.
Yes.
And taken a topic and broken it down into a whole show easily. And wrapped up the first half of the year and still left some things without discussion.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So what we're going to do is, rather than trying to breathlessly skim through all of it in one show, I want to just take a few topics because there are so many.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to leave out corruption, for example. There are topics that we're just going to have to leave on the table for January.
I think all of these topics have corruption sort of at the foundation,
That's true. That's a good point. So I thought we would start with what is most urgently topical now. It seems very it's white hot in the news cycle right now. But it certainly is an old subject, and that is sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And assault, sexual assault for that matter, sometimes in the same place, which is the workplace, where neither of them belongs. You know, it's hard to know where to begin with this. We can begin with that a year ago, despite the fact that our current president admitted on a tape that on the Access Hollywood tape that has was validated immediately by all sources, including him.
Yes.
So we're just gonna,
which he now denies because he talks BS.
Well, that's
what he does.
We'll come back to that. I have a very fascinating theory about that. It's in. Please notice I said very fascinating.
Yes.
So that's like very unique.
Something's, no, very fascinating is
something,
on the fascinating scale. Okay. It's up there. Unique
that's
is
true.
Either
yeah,
unique is an as an either or
yeah,
either or
it's,
thing.
It's binary,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's one of a kind, or it's one,
or
of,
it's not,
or it's one of two or more.
Right.
So, anyway, what was I saying?
You were talking about a year ago.
Despite the president's admission, he at least convinced the Electoral College that he ought to be president.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say that he convinced the majority of the American people because he didn't.
Right.
But he did successfully navigate his way to becoming elected. So my first question for you, because this is your area, not harassment, politics, mm-hmm. everybody calm down. My first question to you is it fair or right that there be a different standard about accountability, not about the behavior, but about accountability and what should happen to people who are elected officials who misbehave. If they misbehave while they're elected, that's one thing. What the deal is with Trump so far as we know, which is an important caveat,
mm-hmm.
he hasn't been misbehaving in this area as he's been president. There haven't been allegations that he's been grabbing women at the White House and assaulting them and putting his hands on them and talking filthy and whatever that might be. I don't know that we would know about that right now, but I kind of think that in the leakiest White House ever that we would know about it. That's where I tend to come down on that. I'll tell you why I'm asking this specifically.
Yeah.
Yesterday, a couple of members of the Congressional Black Caucus were waiting for an elevator, and a reporter came up and asked if John Conyers should resign from the House of Representatives because of the allegations against mm-hmm. him and his admission that he had settled a sexual harassment claim.
Right.
I guess I would say, I wouldn't say secretly, I would say in confidence. He did it through the system that allows him to do that.
Right.
And to me, that's not secretly. To me, secretly is a guy in the parking lot with a bag of cash.
Right.
So let's accept that all of that is correct and factual. And so these members were asked that question, shouldn't he resign? And they said, well, they dodged the question, and they pushed back with something about, well, what other examples? And the reporter, spit out three examples immediately that were, like Bob Packwood, and so forth.
And did Packwood resign or was he ejected?
He resigned because he was about to be ejected by the Senate, which would be rare.
Yeah.
Extremely rare.
This happened in 92, right?
Right.
It was as I was starting to get interested in politics. So I knew about it without knowing all the details.
Yeah.
So I think I don't have a firm grasp of what my opinion is with regard to this question. But I think where I start from is if it's something with regard to elected officials or with regard to, I think, any major public figure, but let's go with elected officials. If this is the sort of behavior that would get you fired, that would get an ordinary person with an ordinary job fired, if you are a senator or a member of Congress, that same exact behavior, or the president, that same exact behavior should get you fired from that job too. Now, the question you're asking is, what does it mean to fire someone from Congress? We say it all the time about members of Congress, the president, elected representatives. Well, their boss is the American people, right?
Yes.
So the only time the American people get to weigh in is during the performance review, which happens every 2 or 4 or 6 years.
Right.
And short of that, the American people don't really have the opportunity to step in and say
enough of you.
Right. That's up to their colleagues in the Senate. All of which is to say, I don't know. Do I think John Conyers should resign? Yes, I do. Do I think Al Franken should resign? Yes, I do. Do I think Donald Trump should resign? Yes, I do.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of the Weekend Water Cooler with Aaron Katz. We're back. Thanks for joining us here on the Weekend Water Cooler. We're talking to Aaron Keck.
Thank you. What were we talking about? We were talking about what happens if Al Franken – what happened if Al Franken resigned?
If Franken resigned. You know, if Al Franken resigned, Minnesota could just hold – I don't know what their law is about replacing a senator who resigned.
It's appointed by the – I think it's appointed by the governor
for the balance of the term or
until a special election, which might be in 2020. I think he would – his term would be up in 2020. Anyway, so if the governor appoints someone, it would be for the next 2 years.
Oh, so it would. So there wouldn't be a special election.
I don't
just
think
be a regular
so.
Election.
I think it would just be for the next 2 years, and then the regular election in 2020.
Well, I will say that in a state where there are laws that permit this, I think it would be more than fair. I think it would be a good enhancement to our system of accountability that any elected official be able to resign and then run to get that office again. And then if they're elected,
they absolutely can.
Then if they're elected, then they're kind of in the situation that Trump is in now, which is, well, I did these things. I don't dispute I did these things.
Yeah.
but elect me anyway.
Right.
And then what?
Yeah.
So this is going to be the problem in the Moore case, for example. Probably.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah.
If he gets elected.
If he gets elected.
Then, you know, I'm telling you, Mitch McConnell is not going to allow for him to be ejected from the Senate because he didn't do anything when he was in the Senate.
Yeah, I don't know how that would play out, but I would be very surprised if it ended with Roy Moore being actually kicked out of the Senate.
I don't think they should do it, Aaron. Look, the Senate is a much bigger and more important and more stable body than one member, and you should not be. I do not cotton to the idea of the United States Senate substituting their wishes for the people of the state that person is representing.
Let's also throw this wrench in.
You let the Republicans kind of fool around with that stuff, and they're going to do it whenever they feel like it.
Yeah. Let's also throw this wrench in, which is that John Conyers is in trouble right now because it came out initially, and now more women have come forward. But the initial report that got John Conyers in trouble was that he had settled a sexual harassment claim,
which he denied, right? Didn't he?
I don't know. He's since come around and said he did,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But he did. He settled a sexual harassment claim. He went through there's a procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently there's a fund, taxpayer money that
gets used to
pay out sexual harassment claims. He's not the only one. He's the one that we know about.
Right.
There are.
I think this is a rampant problem.
$15 million worth, right, of sexual harassment claims that have been, like, sexual harassment settlements that have been made in the last 10 years. Is that correct?
Something like that.
And it's not just John Conyers. We're talking about a lot of people in Congress and the Senate. So the issue that we're talking about right now, the people that we're talking about right now, Donald Trump, Roy Moore, Al Franken, John Conyers, in the media, Matt Lauer, Garrison Keillor, Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein, Charlie Rose. All of these names are sort of exploding into the media all at the same time, and it leads to the impression that, oh, now we're on a witch hunt. Oh, now it's just people coming forward and naming names, and it's women who had a bad date, and now they're coming forward and making these claims, and we've gone too far. We've gone too far. Yeah. We need to dial it back. And people have this reaction because we're hearing 15 names all coming into the media. Yeah, once.
Right.
And that can be overwhelming. So people immediately start pushing back and saying, well, now we've gone too far. The truth of the matter is that what we're seeing right now is the tip of the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. And
this
old iceberg.
So much deeper than what we're seeing right now. And all of these conversations that are being had about, oh, it's a witch hunt. Oh, we've gone too far. Oh, what should the Senate do? What should the House do? Should we leave it up to the American people, all of these are questions that they're side questions that we're asking ourselves because those are the only questions that we can ask without completely overwhelming our minds. We're confronting those questions in order to avoid or put off having to confront the larger issue, which is that our society is fundamentally corrupt with this
structural breakdown has been there. It's been right in front of us all the time.
Yeah.
For many of us, it's been, this is what I've been talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's not, I think it's less overwhelming. It's less overwhelming to me than it is to, you know, men that I know.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, when I told you this about Anita Hill, what did you think I was talking about?
Yeah.
You know, they all thought, well, this is a bizarre story and, you know, and it's only her. And why did she do this? Well, she didn't do this. They went and got her.
They went and got her. Like the Washington Post with Roy Moore.
And there was a second woman and they did not permit her to testify.
Yeah. And this was 1991. What was it? 1989, I think, was the first article about, and I'm not going to know the details. I read this earlier. It was a big article that two journalists had written about sexual harassment and sexual assault in, I think, Hollywood. And they ended up publishing it in like Cosmopolitan or some magazine like and the reason, and it wasn't Cosmo, it was just a magazine. It was kind of an entertainment. It was a comedy magazine. It was an entertainment magazine.
Okay.
And not a magazine about entertainment, but like Mad Magazine kind of thing that you read in order to be entertained.
Right.
And the reason they went to that journal was because they had this huge article about sexual harassment in Hollywood, and they knew that if they took it to Time, Newsweek, U.S. News, The New York Times, any of those serious outlets.
Yeah.
They would have been laughed out of the room.
Right.
Because
we're not poking this giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they took it to an entertainment magazine instead, and what got published was this like wacky story about how to avoid being harassed in Hollywood. That was the state of things in 1989.
Well,
and now we're going back and looking at this today and thinking,
"Oh
my God.
There it is."
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It was all
going
there.
Going back and reading the stuff that was already there.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going to
come back and talk about Matt Lauer pinching Katie Couric on a regular basis, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, how did that not get a little more attention? So we'll be back shortly. Everybody take a breath. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Jean Bolduc, and I'm talking today with Aaron Keck.
Hello.
Dr. Keck is in the house, and we're talking about sexual harassment.
Mm.
And it's complicated. Relationships are complicated, and there are degrees of what this unwanted behavior is that we, you know, I think broadly people are beginning to understand that women may have engaged in, I thought I told him no, but I didn't really sufficiently tell him no, stop it, whatever. I've had situations in my working life where I don't particularly have this issue, but I have lots of exposure to many, many women who do, who will say, you know, Bob in accounting, you know, every time he gets on the elevator with me, he talks a certain way to me. He really makes me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave it vague like that, right? And my response is, well, did you tell him to knock it off? And it's like, well, you know, my boss is friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and he's a level up, or he's two levels up, or he's a vice president, or, you know, whatever. And it's almost always that power imbalance that's in the mix. And women sometimes will go to HR
mm-hmm.
and will complain about that without telling Bob from accounting to knock it off.
Right.
And usually HR is going to tell those women, well, the first step is you need to tell Bob from accounting to knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
If it continues after that, then if you want to file a complaint, come in and file a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that the women who are in that situation are thinking, yeah, but if I do that, now the target is on me.
Yeah.
They're right.
Yes.
By the way.
Yeah.
And the retaliation is going to happen.
Yeah.
I was
for exactly the same reason that the harassment happened in the first place, right? It's that power imbalance.
Right. Yeah. Because it's about... some of it's just about, listen, you're not the boss of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can talk to you any way I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I didn't do anything to you. And in many cases, it's, you know, even if I did do something to you, you looked at me this way, or you were dressed that way, and you flirted with me by the fact that you exist and walked by.
Yep. Or maybe actually did flirt with me once, and I assume that that's a blank check to say whatever I want for the rest of my life.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there is this thing, and I've talked to an older fellow I know, and he said, well, you're never going to see people meeting and getting married and whatever, from relationships that they start at work. And I thought, you know, that's just nonsense.
Yeah.
That's just not true.
Yeah.
When I met my husband, within minutes of the time I met him, and I agree that this is unusual, but we had a peculiar and unusual meetup at work. I was walking by. I know everybody's on the edge of their seats to understand.
I'm on the edge
this.
Of my seat.
So I was walking by with my friends on the way to lunch. We both worked at the Travelers Insurance Company in Hartford, Connecticut, where all people in Hartford meet at an insurance company.
Yes.
And I walked by, and he was drinking coffee, reading the paper. I looked at him. He looked back at me.
This is such a Hartford story.
I know. We had never met, and this is about as exciting as a thing is going
to
be that
Hartford.
Happens at an insurance company.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and smiled at him, and I said said something along the lines of, "Is that your job?
Mm-hmm.
Are you working? Is that your job?" And he said, "Yes." Yeah, and I'm good at it, you know. So, and my girlfriends and I went on our way. We, you know, sat for 30 minutes and ate our lunch. And on the way back, he was still sitting there. Now, some would say that was stalking. Well,
or he was just reading the paper.
He was reading the paper. It's one of those two, yeah. So his.
I mean, you came back in the same direction.
I came
you
back
went
in the same
there,
direction, but that was instead of going outside and around the block to get back to the building. So to be fair. So we're walking back, and I said, "I was still working." He said, "Yes, working very hard." And I said, "And drinking coffee, that's your job also?" And he said, "Definitely." And we laughed, and we went on our way.
Yeah.
I still have no idea who he is, where he works,
right.
But, you know, whatever. So now we're waiting at the elevator bank to go back upstairs to our department. And he comes walking up to the elevator bank with the newspaper under his arm. And he stops, and I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Well, I'm going to get more coffee, of course." And he said, "You want to come with me?" I said, "Definitely." And I walked up.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can't believe this. It's really true. I can prove this. I mean, he'll verify this.
Okay,
story.
Yes.
I walked up. I put my arm around his waist. He put his arm around my waist. And the two of us walked off together.
It's like a love at first sight kind of story.
It really kind of is, isn't it? And we walked off. And the first thing I said to him is, "Now, if I turn around, it's going to ruin it. If I stop and, you know, turn back and, you know, my girlfriends know that I don't know who you are."
Yes.
And he said, "Oh, I know. This is just for the full effect, you know." So we walked for maybe, I don't know, 50 feet or something.
Uh-huh.
And then I stopped and I said, "So listen, you know, I'm a peon in this company. And if I don't get back to work on time, I'm going to be in trouble. So this was fun and everything, but I really have to go." And and we introduced ourselves to each other, first name.
Right.
And he said, "What floor do you work on?" I said, "I work on 7. He said, "Well, I work on 6. And I'll get you some coffee if you want." And I said, "Well, that's really nice." And so I told him how I take my coffee. And he brought me coffee up to my desk and up to the desk of a friend of mine.
Yes.
Whose desk was near the elevator bank. And my desk was on the other side of the floor. You have to get the picture of 1977. Oh, my God. 1977 insurance company.
Let's
which
just have
is a
Gene take a moment
which
here
is, I know,
to
which
recognize
is a
40
wide,
years.
So, yes, that's right. I did this before I was born. It's just what it is. So it's a wide open floor with a lot of desks and a lot of people working. And, you know, the cubicle thing had not happened yet. So
this whole show is all just a pretext for you to tell
really
this
to,
this
for me to tell
charming
this story.
Love story.
So so I did, and I set this up so that he would drop the coffee at my friend's desk,
mm-hmm.
so that my other girlfriends in my department could then scope him out and tell me what they knew about him. So he walked in with great drama and put the coffee down, stopped and looked around so everybody could see his face, and then went back to the elevator. And rode down, couldn't see where I was. And the rest is history, but that is flirting. That's mega flirting.
Yes.
And if we had gone out on a date,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like it, you know, I wasn't going to work for me, and he kept coming by my desk.
Right.
And he kept asking me to go out with him. He made ways to find himself on the elevator with mm-hmm. me and talk naughty to me or stand near me and cause me to feel threatened. That's what harassment is.
That would have been harassment, yes.
And this whole thing is the Potter Stewart example. It's like the obscenity standard.
Mm-hmm. You know when you see it.
You can't nail it down, but you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And that makes for an extremely difficult policy posture for companies, except to say that the person who is making the accusation has to be able to know it when he or she sees it.
Yeah.
And articulate what it is within a certain framework, I think.
Yeah. What you're describing reminds me of, and I'm going to get in trouble here if anyone is listening who happens to have any kind of expertise in psychology or psychiatry, because I am absolutely not. But one of the way that I understand mental illness is there are, you know, there's the DSM, and you can clear definitions of
right.
what different disorders are.
Right.
But ultimately, what constitutes a disorder? Like, what is it that leads you to be sort of diagnosable as having a disorder?
Right.
Is that whatever it is that's going on is something that is making it difficult or impossible for you to function in society on a day-to-day
right.
basis,
It's dysfunction.
Yes,
right.
It's dysfunction. So you could be – like there are people who are narcissistic, for instance, but to have a narcissistic personality disorder, you have to be incapable of functioning in society
right.
or have that difficulty. And
right.
I think harassment, if you want to nail down a definition, is something similar to that. Harassment is that level of behavior that makes it uncomfortable or difficult or impossible
right.
for you to function in the workplace or in like whatever organization it is where
right.
where it's taking place, or just even like out on the street. Harassment is that which makes it uncomfortable or difficult or impossible for someone to feel comfortable walking down the street and then
right.
have to turn around and go the other way. It's that trigger that the degree of behavior that makes just sort of everyday functioning
right.
difficult or impossible.
And normal interactions that most of us would consider normal.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you want to go have lunch? And you go, no. And
right.
I go, okay, well then, is 11:30
yeah.
good?
Which makes it different for different people, right?
Right.
I mean, and that's
right.
that's part of what makes it difficult to define. I know of a situation where there was a like in a workplace where I was not any time recently, but in a workplace that I've been in where a man was working there and a woman was working next to him, and the man was sort of being sort of overly flirtatious,
mm-hmm.
And it made the woman uncomfortable. So she raised an issue, and it was dealt with to everyone's satisfaction. Like the guy promised to stop and did.
Right.
Like it was very like cut and dry. This is what happened, and
right.
we all move on. But had the woman reciprocated the flirting, it would have been a completely different story. With the same behavior,
right.
it would not have constituted harassment. It's the
right.
it's the act of making someone uncomfortable
and
making it impossible for them to do their jobs or function.
The other thing is, Aaron, that then we're you know, of course we're over on time. So
yeah.
But the other thing is that I think that Americans in particular get a little bit too focused on the sexual and not on the harassment.
Yes.
If you just talked about workplace harassment, imagine how it would take some of the steam out of this subject.
Yeah.
And that people could focus on the fact that you don't go to work to have somebody hassling you all the time.
Yeah.
You're trying to do your job.
Yeah. I mean, and what this is bullying, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the same
it really
thing.
Is.
Yeah, you're right.
So it might be an interesting tip to tell people, you know, don't go to HR and say, that Charlie from accounting is, or Bob, we all know it's Bob from accounting.
Right.
That Bob from accounting is bothering me and sexually harassing me. Just go in there and say he's bullying
he's
me
bullying
and bothering
me. And actually,
me.
That is, I think that's exactly correct. And
we're not the only ones who have had that thought. Just down the road from University Place is the Orange County Rape Crisis Center. They go into the schools and they teach elementary school kids about bullying. They right. have an anti-bullying campaign that they right. take into elementary schools. And the reason that they do that is because there are documented studies saying that people who are bullies when they are 8 years old are more likely
to commit sexual assault
and sexual harassment when they're older. And you're right. It's because it's the same thing. It's
just,
yeah. We need
to put these things together a lot more than we do. Well, now that we've solved all of this, right? I think that's an important aha moment there. So that's a good place for us to take a pause and appreciate all of you for listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be right back with more with Aaron Keck. Okay, we're back. Thank you for joining us on The Weekend Water Cooler. We're talking to Aaron Keck, Gene Bolduc here, and we're talking about sexual harassment in the workplace, which I think we agree should probably just be thought of as harassment and bullying, because it's much more accurate to what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
The sexual aspect of it, I think, came out of feminism and the idea that you wouldn't talk to a man that way, that women were getting this disparate treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that much more emphasis should come on the harassment aspect. I'll be fine. aspect of it, because that's really the point. And it isn't only women. There are plenty of men who have been hassled in this way, and there's no company that this is good for as part of their culture. So,
well, women still get the brunt of it. And I want to come back to a couple of points that we made earlier. First of all, the notion that this is what we're hearing now is just the tip of the iceberg. And this is something that I've sort of had it in my head for a long time, that there are – whenever we're confronted with a hard truth or a difficult reality, there are four ways just in general that people can respond to the hard truth. We can choose to ignore it and just like push it off to the side and move on with our lives.
So we can check that box.
We can deny it. We can just put blinders on and say, no, this is a lie. The problem doesn't exist. The people who are raising it must be lying or paid by George Soros or someone.
Right.
We can embrace it and say, no, this is actually a good thing because – and then make up some rationalization for why this is actually the best thing in the world. All three of those approaches are – I think fundamentally corrupt.
That the bad
behavior is actually a good thing for whatever reason.
Right.
People, I think the vast majority of people ignore the hard truth whenever it comes up.
Yeah.
Of the rest, there's a decent percentage that deny it. You get the real nasty folks who embrace it.
Right.
But all of those are, I think, incorrect approaches. The correct approach is to actually confront it, to face the problem head on. And with respect to this, there are a number of really, really difficult truths. And I want to get back to just the notion that what we're seeing now in the media is the tip of the iceberg, because the women who are speaking out now, and the reason this started in Hollywood, the reason this started with, was it Ashley Judd who spoke out first against Harvey Weinstein, and Anthony Rapp who first spoke out against Kevin Spacey?
Right.
The people who first raised concerns are people who are themselves rich and powerful.
That's
people who have power, who have status, who probably have pretty decent bank accounts where even if they lost every job that was coming their way, they'd still be okay.
Right.
But what that means is that there are many, 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 many more women who don't have power.
Right.
Just like you, young Gene in the workplace, who fortunately in that particular case, you were not harassed and that ended up working out okay. But in your example, if you had not reciprocated and the attention continued, that would have been harassment. And as you yourself said, you were a peon in this company.
Right.
And the man that you were talking to was a higher up, you probably wouldn't have raised it, certainly not in 1977, right?
No, and, you know, I'm wouldn't have 19 years old.
Yeah, 19 years old,
and I need this job.
Need the money.
I'm a clerk, and he's an underwriter in the group department.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's in a career position, and I have a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the deal.
So that's the tip of the iceberg on one level. The other tip of the iceberg is that when it comes to a certain number of, and I think the fact that we're hearing people, that we're hearing these stories come out, like obviously in the media, because it's the news, they're going to cover themselves.
Right.
So
you're
hearing those coming out of the media, but also politics, also the arts and big business.
Right.
And let's throw sales in here as well. Those four categories,
what
do they all have in common? If you are an artist of any kind, if you are a writer or a stand-up comedian or a performer of any kind, or if you are going into – or let's just start with artists. If you're an artist of any kind and you can talk to any successful artist, actor, writer, anything like that, what is the story they tell about – coming up and becoming successful? Oh, I got 50 rejection letters before I got a yes.
Right.
Oh, I went to so many auditions and got turned down before I came back. Same exact thing with politics. If you're getting into politics, you'll probably lose 3 or 4 elections and
before
have voters repudiate you at the polls before you come back and win. If you are in business, you've got to take big risks and fail and then come back again.
Right.
If you are in sales, you're making call after call after call and getting hung
people
up on it, and you got to get back.
Right. Exactly
all four of those fields encourage you to not take no for an answer.
That's right. To initiate and be rejected.
To initiate and be rejected and just keep plowing forward anyway.
And by the way, move on and try the same thing despite that wonderful quote about – that's probably a misquote – about insanity is trying the same thing again and again expecting a different result. But if you're in sales, you got your sales pitch, you know, somebody hangs up, you call them, you don't adjust it for the next call.
Yeah.
You might, after a time, adjust the language a little bit. But you're still calling to say,
with the same
pitch. You really want.
And the people who are successful in those fields are the sort of people who are willing to not take no for an answer, who are willing to just keep plowing forward. So we should not be surprised when it turns out that the people at the head of all of these fields so often tend to be serial sexual harassers.
That's an excellent point.
And this becomes a really hard truth, because how do you confront such – how do you deal with, how do you address, how do you resolve such fundamental levels of just corruption in these basic fields? Like, you go to any business school, I guarantee they will tell you, don't take no for an answer. Keep plowing forward. Like, this is what is taught in schools.
Well, and here's a really interesting point. Why has there not been a blockbuster set of accusations about anybody in Wall Street yet, given that insight?
Yeah.
That's a real piece of wonderment.
And
you got to think that it's because the hush fund process, so to speak, is very effective.
Yeah.
But, you know, considering some of the sheer debauchery that has occurred among people who work in Wall Street during their off hours and during their work hours.
Yeah.
And the absolute bloodthirsty drive to succeed and not take no for an answer. It seems like, you know, that's going to be the next sector to see an explosion of activity.
Absolutely would not surprise me. In Chapel Hill, we dealt with this first this year in the improv community,
right
with the DSI Comedy Theater and the allegations against the owner. I have done comedy at DSI for many, many years, so I knew and was friends with all of the players involved. So this was very, very close to me back in July when this came out. And one of the things that we realized, because this DSI was not an isolated incident, even within the improv community, there were allegations in New York, Chicago. The Indie Week just did this big expose on the Pitt Theater, which has come in and taken over the space. They're dealing with the same accusations in New York. And what we all just sort of very quickly came to realize was everything that I just said about arts and people rising to the top were not taking no for an answer. Take all of that and now put it into the context of an art form, which is improv comedy, whose fundamental foundational principle is that it's always wrong to say no.
Yeah.
It's the principle of yes and. Like
yes
whatever
and,
is said, you accept it, you say yes to
premise.
It and move on, which is a great, great premise for an improv scene. It's a fantastic premise for engaging in conversations with people, engaging in negotiations with people. It's real valuable. And it also can lead to some very bad corruption.
It, you know, it's difficult. And we, you know, we've had all this time to talk about it, Aaron, and have not solved this problem.
We're not going to.
I can't believe we had, you know, the entire hour of the weekend water cooler and have not solved this problem.
No.
And we're not going to. But we're going to keep talking about it because that's how we roll. And I appreciate you joining me today and digging into a difficult subject. And the weekend water cooler is always better with Aaron Keck.
Thank you.
Although we didn't have any water at the water cooler today.
I had coffee.
You had coffee.
This is mostly water.
It's mostly water. It's just enriched water.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue talking about the end of the year as we know it. And we'll see you all again next week. Thanks for joining us on the Weekend Water Cooler.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc. And tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.